Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 12th of May, 2021. On the podcast today, Richard Holohan, CEO of Plarium Imaging, answers investors' questions which range from FDA approval to potential global rollout. Also on the podcast, Morris Healy, founder and CEO of Glantis, G-L-A-N is ticker there. They are a provider of accounts payable automation and analytics solutions. And Morris talks about why they listed yesterday and what they intend to do with the £10 million they raised. Also, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll all see lots of the content. In fact, there's a bulletin board heroes from Zach Mee, of course. He charts some of the most popular stocks, rising stocks of the day. Check that out. There's an article there on President Energy. There's one there on Nightcap. Raise a £10 million to fund a UK bar rollout. There's one on Greatland Gold and plenty. Oh, Myriad Advertising one there. And I just want to check. I always check this out. The COVID-19 Index. Biggest rise of days. Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals. About time they'd have bounced somewhere. It's been falling heavy. That's up 9% to 2.3. Biggest fall of the day is Biotrol. And that's down 2.24% to 6.5 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Richard Holohan, CEO of Plarium Imaging, P-O-L-X is ticker. Richard, thanks for joining me.
Good to be with you again, Justin.
Yeah, and do you know what? The more I read about your company, the more I think, and I've just said this before we came on, I thought, wow, you're in a very unique position at the moment because you have probably the best tech in an area where it's really needed. In fact, when I was going through your slideshow, I was looking at the Oxford Uni COVID study and CT scans and MRI couldn't pick up the lung issues that people were suffering with long COVID. And yet you've got this tech now going towards FDA approval, and it's just a massive market. Your company could be quite big, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. This is a bit, you know, the history of medicine and medical imaging, right, is people trying to provide clinicians and patients with new tools and or the best tools to try to get to the bottom of anything in particular. Yeah. So that there's heavy lifting from a physics engineering point of view that goes on in the development of any new technology. But then you reach a point in the process where this requires a close engagement with clinical medicine, because you have to intimately understand the thing that you're trying to observe, right? It's no longer a physics question. It's what exactly are we trying to do here? And I think historically, people have thought of the evolution of medical imaging as new technologies replacing old ones. But in fact, if you look at what happens, it's not that. It's that the tool gets optimized for an objective. And in fact, all of these technologies are out there now trying to help clinicians, and we're the latest one, and I think the best one for pulmonary medicine.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, when you keep saying there's unmet medical need there, and I thought in my head that phrase sort of stuck recently, and I thought, well, you can't treat a patient properly if you're not using the best technology. And if the technology you have at the moment is not picking up like issues like you said, COVID, then you've got to use the best technology. And like I said, yours is probably the best. So, I mean, like I said, when you did say recently that you'll see polarizers in most hospitals, I thought, well, yeah, in fact, when you think more about that, that's the obvious conclusion, isn't it? Because if you want to treat people properly, you've got to use the best equipment.
Well, I think if you were to, and we have... you know, perhaps often wished that there wasn't a GoPro camera somewhere hovering over everyone's shoulder all the time so that you could rewind these tapes and look at them. But at various points in history, it's no secret that, you know, really important and qualified people have watched new technologies come into market and wondered how they would find a place, what their use would be, how many of them there would be. You know, there was a time when people thought that there would only be a dozen MR machines in the world because CT already existed and the problem of seeing inside the human body was solved. Mm. Well, it wasn't, right? And so these medical problems are so complicated, and doctors need answers to questions. I think the other thing, of course, that happens is the questions get better, right?
Yeah.
So I see us as filling a gap. Pulmonary medicine was really left behind compared to the benefits that CT and MR brought to almost all the rest of medicine. So we're here to help.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's start with some questions. And these are shareholder questions. And this is the first one. And it relates to the recent news, actually, a new system order from the University of British Columbia, who, of course, are children's hospital is a major pediatric research and teaching hospital. And someone just simply said, well, this is an additional order of your units. That's got to be good news, hasn't it?
Sure. It's wonderful news. They're also part of a cluster of institutions that we now have working in pediatrics. Cincinnati Children's Hospital in Cincinnati is a leading researcher in cystic fibrosis. SickKids in Toronto, their companion. We've now added BC Children's. Those guys collaborate like crazy, pushing the frontiers of trying to use this tool in that particular segment of medicine. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, yeah. And someone says, do you see this happening more often, sort of multiple installs in a single location?
Yeah, if you look at the history of this, so I'll just quickly say already that we have a handful of sites that have more than one machine. Mm-hmm. Duke, of course, more than one. The University of Virginia has multiple systems. Cincinnati has multiple systems. So it's not unusual. And of course, the high end of academic medicine in the U.S. these days are really in many cases, the hub of a hub and spoke kind of system where these guys are actually reading or providing services for a network of hospitals in a regional geography. So this is not unusual. It's something that we expect, and we already have a handful of cases of how this works.
Okay, good. Next question is, how would you gauge the level of interest in the pipeline, especially after you get FDA approval? Because I assume you can't take pre-orders, can you, until that clearance has happened? Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. That is not allowed, but we can. So we're freely and openly using best practices from multiple kind of vertical industrial kind of collaborators in and around us. One of them, of course, are the big manufacturers of imaging equipment themselves, who have kind of well-known techniques for calling on institutions and presenting information. The pharma guys actually use a different technique where they have independent knowledge-based channel organizations where they're able, allowed, and encouraged to present information to clinical practitioners about the technology. But the presentations are not about selling equipment. They're about exposing people, educating people, presenting cases to people. I think our role in many ways is to show how the technology can be used on patients and cases of the day. Inevitably, when we meet people, the question as the meeting unwinds is, how will this affect some patient that is on your calendar this afternoon? Mm-hmm. And so it's our mission to kind of present that information so that when they do go back to their office and say, gosh, if only I had the Plarian system, I could get to the bottom of this more quickly, right?
So
we're able to go out. We gauge then interest by the people who accept appointments, the people who participate with us in advisory board discussions. It's pretty easy to find out how interested someone is when you present the case.
Yeah, yeah. And what is that? Is that level of interest quite high? You impressed by that?
Yes, absolutely. People, I think we constantly have this feeling of, hurry up, right? What's taking so long, right? So yes, absolutely.
So you see some demand there. And how long would it take, for example, after FDA approval, say someone orders on that, you know, the next day, how long does the system take to get it up and running and shipped?
Yeah, so the beauty of the underlying technology here is we're able to build these pretty quickly. Until now, as you would guess, we build them in small lots. We do use contract manufacturers who are skilled in the art of doing this. Those guys have plenty of facility and capacity to grow with us going forward, but we can assemble these systems quickly. The components inside the system are fairly commercial components. There's not a lot of custom manufacturing going on inside the machine, really. It's about what we do, not what we do it with. Mm-hmm. So we can scale quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Next question is, how are things progressing with the FDA? Are you in contact with the FDA, or after submission, and is it just basically you submit it and there's no dialogue from there, or is it constant dialogue? What happens?
No, we are intensely engaged with the FDA. No, there is a continuous weekly back and forth with them on questions and answers having to do with the submission. I mean, you could kind of squint your eyes and imagine a drug device combination submission. It is everything that the FDA does in one submission, right? Mm. There's the drug side of the house, which is CDER, the device side of the house, which is CDRH. Those guys spend all day, every day in their own domains. But then along comes a drug device combination like us, which has everything in it. Mm. And so even though the table of contents and the requirements are highly prescribed for a submission, that doesn't mean that what's inside the submission is anything that those guys know a lot about. So there are intense levels of questions from across the entire submission, from shortly after we submit it until approval.
Well, that's quite reassuring, because it's more collaborative and them seeking information rather than an exam. Like, you sit an exam and you've got to wait 6 months for the results. So it's more you're in discussion all the time then.
Yes, and I think that's the good version of the story. I think if you remember, and we spoke about this in an earlier study, the FDA also has the opportunity, if they wish, to request an orientation meeting before they start the review process. Mm-hmm. And they did with us. And happily, we had the entire team on the call, and we went through the submission, went through the technology, and even so far as bringing them absolutely current on everything that we're doing with the technology presently at sites in a research kind of way, even though that material isn't, strictly speaking, in the submission, it gives them a great context within which to review the submission. So we were just thrilled about that. It went really well. And so, you know, at the end of the day, regulators regulate. That's their charter, and that's what they do. But in terms of our ability to present this and surround it comprehensively with a context and let them ask any question they wished, it was a wonderful way to start the review.
Yeah, yeah. And so, for example, like that study that your Oxford University did and, you know, on long COVID and still doing, would they know about that? Would you?
We presented that. So, they do.
Okay, good. What work, if any, is being done to get approval in other territories outside the U.S.?
Yeah, well, our backstory and the history of Polarian has been call a milestone, raise money to accomplish it, repeat, right? That's kind of how we got here. Mm-hmm. And in that context, our prior raise was simply to get us to approval. So we've not begun the process of looking outside of the U.S. market until just now, right? The most recent raise we did, specifically in the use of funds slide, said we will begin the process of considering which territories in what sequence, and also begin the process of evaluating how to get any of the rest of our technology in the development pipeline into an approved status. So that's the pulmonary vascular disease techniques, the gas exchange and red blood cell stuff. All of that, we've now begun the process of queuing it for how we get that through approval and commercialized, and picking which territories to address next and how.
I see. Do you have any updates, or is the progress going on with the COVID study at Oxford University?
So the initial small study is complete. Mm-hmm. I believe at some point here shortly, it will wind up being published in a pretty significant journal. So that's no mean feat. Mm-hmm. The follow-on study is in the process of getting organized and funded in the grant mechanism there inside the UK. And we've made no secret of the notion that we're supporting the researchers there in their endeavors to obtain that.
Yeah, but when I read that, I thought it was amazing that, you know, your technology picked up issues that MRI, CT couldn't pick up. That is astounding, isn't it?
Well, I think it's back to our kind of opening comments about tools for purpose, right?
Yeah.
There are simply limitations in other technologies to what exactly it is that they're visualizing. And that's not to say, and I never underestimate, there are a lot of really smart people working on how to surround existing technologies, and you see ample evidence of this even in lay press, people trying to surround something with AI try to infer or compute or into something that isn't present in the native kind of direct image, but may probably be there. And that includes, you know, even things like combining it with the content of your electronic patient record and doing some educated statistical kind of opinion guessing at that point. But I think at the end of the day, medicine would always rather use a quantitative direct observation than anything inferred or intuited, right?
Yeah.
If you can directly quantitatively reproducibly observe something, why would you do anything else, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and last question here. You recently mentioned that you see polarizers in most hospitals over the next 10 years. If you received Hatch-Waxman protection, would that mean Polarian would supply most hospitals or have some kind of relationship with this, most hospitals? How logistically would that work? So Hatch-Waxman is 5 to 7 years, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, it is. And so I think you remember that we are an adjunct to MR technology.
Yeah.
And so I think the way that you would see this unfolding is exactly the way that we've explained it. And that is the high end of academic medicine first, because that's where discovery and applications are developed, clinical pathways are sorted out, and all of that is shared among medical experts and across all of medicine. And then that always percolates kind of downwards into the healthcare infrastructure, into smaller places, still have to have an MR machine. So in that regard, our way forward is gated by the presence of MR systems. But even there, I think you can see evolution occurring in a classic product sort of way. We figure out ways to make the technology more accessible. That usually is putting products on the classic smaller, better, faster, cheaper pathway, making them better suited to ubiquity. And of course, we, in our long-term vision of this movie, we see all of those things happening.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, you must be quite excited where you are now. I mean, because it's been, how many years, but you're getting towards the end game and commercialization. It's quite exciting as you approach.
It is. It's exciting both on the technology side, because we see continued discovery and researchers sharing results. Remember, most of our users belong to the Xenon 129 MRI Clinical Trials Consortium, where they share results back and forth and techniques and collaborate on clinical problems. It's just a wonderful vehicle, among academic researchers. So it's apolitical and agnostic. It's just the best possible way for information to get shared. And then as we get more and more systems out there, this ability for like institutions working on the same clinical problem. Right now, many sites are working on different clinical problems. And so it's always great to see people sharing this information and developing the application as we go forward here.
Marvelous stuff. Richard, it's good to chat to you as always. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Yep. Thanks for your time, Justin, always.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Maurice Healy, founder and CEO of Glantis. That's GLAN. Maurice, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on, Justin. Nice to speak to you.
Yeah, it must be quite a busy week for you. So thanks for taking the time out. Because, of course, you just listed and raised $10 million. Before we get into that, we're going to use the funds for and the sector of the business, how it's growing, and your aims and goals and ambitions. Can you just give us a brief summary as to what Glantis is all about, please, Maurice?
Absolutely, Justin. So Glantis is a fintech technology company. We have developed our own platform. We operate in the space of accounts payable for large global organizations. And people often think of accounts payable as some dusty finance office with somebody writing checks in the corner. Our market, our companies, their accounts payable department spends north of $1 billion a year in the US and probably $500 million in EMEA. And they have suppliers in the region of 4,000 to 120,000 suppliers. And because they've got multiple systems, multiple regions, multiple instances of systems, and it doesn't matter how sophisticated those systems are, it's not joined up properly. So every year they leak millions in lost credits, in duplicate payments, in people not complying with contracts that they agreed globally. Our platform sits above the organization. It grabs the data from all the systems and gives them one view of their entire accounts payable ecosystem. We start by recovering their lost working capital. We then implement our technology to prevent it from happening. And then we give them detailed advanced analytics that allows them to run the AP function more efficiently and more effectively.
Yeah, so you're essentially having your system in place save them what can be millions, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I mean, on average, depending on their spend, we would save them between 1 and 2 million per billion per annum.
Wow. Okay. And where are your customers there, Maurice? Are they UK, Europe, or all around? Where?
So we're in EMEA, and that's run out of our London office. Mm-hmm. So we have a large number of European customers. And then we also have a large number in the US. Our customers kind of split into two. We have smaller ones in the SME. We've got about 150 of those. And then we've got these 50 global organizations, and they're split 50-50 between the US and EMEA.
Yeah, yeah. And what is it? I mean, how big is the market and what is the competition like in that sector?
Yeah, it's. Let me start with the market. The market is about $3 billion worldwide, but it's a growing market because as economies grow, these organizations or customers, these global brands that you'd recognize, they are growing with it. And as they grow, this issue of multiple systems, multiple geographies, the problems that that creates grows as well. Mm-hmm. And then what's very good for us, when the market starts to increase its M&A activities, well, that helps us as well. That's important for us because if one of our customers is acquired or acquires or is involved in a merger, then the problem that we solve, that problem grows and is compounded by these activities within our customer base. So the need for our product becomes more important all of the time. So a growing market and an exciting market.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how much did you raise yesterday, and what are you hoping to do with it then, Maurice?
Yeah, so we raised £10 million. We were twice oversubscribed, which was nice at the end of the roadshow. And we have three growth areas, Justin. We grow organically, we grow through partnerships, and we grow by acquisition. So let me take you just briefly through each one of those. Mm-hmm. The organic growth has two elements to it. One is we have this existing customer base, and it needs more from us. As we solve one, we do the discover the problems, recover the working capital, and then we're on to the next phase of automation and then the next phase of the advanced analytics. So there's organic growth from the existing customer base. So part of the money will be spent on us having the account management structure to take those customers on the journey, complete the journey with them. And then we've done really well in establishing the Glantis brand in our market, not only in EMEA, but in the States. So we are now recognized as having a unique solution for these large AP functions. And so we're getting more inbound activity now. So the new logo organic growth has doubled, I'd say, since the start of the year. So that's exciting. The organic growth is strong. The second bit is partnerships. And we were, I suppose I'd have been a bit skeptical. I don't want to be kind of one widget of 12 widgets that someone is selling. But in actual fact, we have a very nice niche. We have found that if we select partners that are working with our profile of customers but are doing something narrower with them, then they're an excellent partner because we are our partner's route to growth, and also they're providing their customers with a much enlarged service. So we signed up a couple in the States over the last 6 months, and they've already started to produce for us. So that's exciting. And then finally, there's the acquisitive side of things. So we are good at finding acquisitions. We're good at implementing them. And we're negotiating them. And then the integration, we're very good at as well. And, you know, the most recent one was January 2020 in the States. And we took it from a zero EBITDA up to, it contributed 700,000 last year and a run rate of about 1.5 million. So that's what we're good at. And those three growth areas are going to drive the scale that we want to bring into the business.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at growth seems very good. Just looking from 2018, your revenue there is 2.4 million euros. 2019, 3.2. And 2020, 8.1. So it's growing very healthily, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And that's really important. And when I'm talking to investors, I point out to them that, first of all, the management are still the biggest shareholder in our organization. And we have a very clear vision of what we can get from valuations over the next couple of years. And we're particularly watching the States, Justin, because the multiples for our type of business, which, you know, large EBITDA margins, strong recurring revenue, own product, are high when you reach scale. So in everything we're doing, and particularly in acquisitions, we're looking at acquiring companies that will be, you know, something like post synergies 4 to 6 times EBITDA. And we know that when we reach a certain scale, the multiples we'll achieve in the States will be between 18 and 30 and yeah. or 4 to 5 times revenue. So that's a big part of our strategy. It's not just about being the best AP software provider. It's about getting those metrics absolutely spot on to deliver value to our investors.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good there. So why IPO in the UK then, Maurice?
Yeah, I'm UK-based for a start, Justin, so that's it. I guess there are two elements to that question, why IPO at all, I suppose, and why on the London Stock Exchange. So the reason for why we chose to IPO, I mean, we were offered debt facilities to do a buy and build. We had equity houses that wanted to invest in us, but we chose the IPO route because the PLC badge means something for our client base. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're a small Irish company, we're not losing around ourselves, but we're dealing with these global brands. And we've raised the money, we've strengthened our balance sheet, we've got a PLC badge against us now. It makes it easy for these large organizations to work with us. So that's one of the reasons for going that. And then London, the London Stock Exchange is a global brand. So having that brand, not only the fact that we're a PLC, but that we're on the London Stock Exchange, well, that means something to our customers. And guess that's in summary why we've chosen the route we chose.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sort of access to capital. Of course, that PLC, like you say, badge, transparency and corporate governance at a certain level that people can trust, yeah. I suppose, isn't it? You know, okay. So looking forward then, Maurice, I mean, if someone, I'm going to ask you for three reasons in a bit why someone should add you to their watch list. If they do, they'll get your news. But sort of going forward, say next maybe 3, 6, 12 months, whatever time frame you like, what are you hoping to achieve? Any milestones or ambitions out there?
The one thing we are, Justin, is a very ambitious company. We will be very busy. That's all I can say to investors. Those three areas that I outlined, organic partnerships and acquisitions, we would expect that we will have activity in all of these areas going forward. So I think the news flow from Glantis will be regular and consistent.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, here we go then. Three reasons, Maurice. Every day on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. To get on that list, of course, people have to hit that follow button. So give us three reasons now why someone should hit that follow button on your page, GLAN, ticker, of course, and add Glantis to their watch list, please.
Number one, we have our own IP, a proven technology platform that with a proven need among large global organizations. Mm. Number two, we have a high value financial model with 89% sticky recurring revenue from a blue chip client base. Mm-hmm. And finally, we have a clear vision through our organic growth partnerships and acquisitions. And we have a strategy to accelerate our revenues over the next couple of years to achieve the scale that will attract the highest multiples for our investors.
Excellent stuff. And I suppose worth adding always, that you just mentioned previously, you do hold a decent amount of skin in the game. So you are aligned with shareholders. And like you say, most of the board, I'm looking here at significant shareholders on your website, and you're top there with the biggest holding.
Absolutely, and the team combined is still around slightly over 50%, I think. Believe me, we are very focused on the growth of our own value in this organization, and very excited about what we can do with that.
Excellent stuff. Maurice, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five. Shield Therapeutics, up 1.9% to 53. At 4, Wood Boys, down 13% to 6 pence. At 3, Agronomics, it's down 7% to 24.15 pence. Big fundraiser did yesterday, 62 million, I think. It just shows how hot the sector is. Another stock I got in very early, and I got out due to impatience, and it rocketed. Almost as if they knew. At two, quantum blockchain technologies, down 11.9% to 1.8. And at one, Kodal Minerals up 5.6 to 0.34. Okay, time for the top five most read RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Oriel Resources, year four drilling programs underway at Fair. At four, Mode Global Holdings, that's Motorpoint's Ryan Moore as CEO. At two, Powerhouse Energy, loan facility to Protus Project SPV. At two, Greatland Gold, commencement of underground decline at Havieron. And at one, that's Synergin, full year results. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.